Today's episode of the City Smeg Podcast is brought to you by Morton. At this point, it's no secret, the new drink that's making waves in the running industry is Morton. It's the world's most carbohydrate-rich sports drink, and it's being used by most of the top marathoners in the world. So Eliud Kipchoge used it in Breaking 2, Wilson Kipsang used it in Tokyo, Galen Rupp used it in Chicago, and most recently, Jeffrey Kimwar won the New York City Marathon using Morton. Every major marathon winner since September 2016 in Berlin has been drinking Morton while on the go. Personally, I used it and tested it since May, and I think it played a major role in me running my two fastest marathons ever. So I set a big PR in Berlin and then ran my second fastest marathon 8 weeks later in New York City. Not that I'm a pro runner or a sub-elite at any level, but it did help me improve and make major jumps in my training. There's two types of drink mixes, one that serves 80 grams of carbs and another that contains 40 grams, and they're aimed at getting you that energy boost for when the going gets tough during the race. I can attest that later on in the races, once I took it, I was feeling great. Really, there was no point where I was feeling any sort of tying up. I was, you know, fueled up for the remainder of the race. Our listeners can try it now. It's on sale in the EU and in the US. All you have to do is visit Morton.com. That's M-A-U-R-T-E-N.com. And our listeners can use coupon code CMP20 for 20% off their next order. It works for Eliud Kipchoge, works for Galen Rupp, it works for myself. You can see for yourself. Visit Morton.com today. My guest for today's show has a very familiar name because I've teased his podcast on this show several times. It is Woody Kincaid. He is a former runner at Portland and now runs for the Bowerman Track Club. He's been injured most of the season, so you haven't seen his name pop up in results, but he's been very consistent with providing the City of Smag podcast network with a nice show that he does where he interviews his fellow Bowerman Track Club teammates like Evan Jaeger, Shelby Houlihan, Mo Ahmed. Lots of great episodes that are already out there. He's got a bunch more. It's a monthly podcast, so we're really happy to have him on the City Smag team and to some extent. But we decided, you know, with the holidays coming up, it's hard to find a bunch of other guests. So I hit him up and said, hey, let's do this. Let's do a little crossover episode. People could get to know you on this show, and it's a nice way to promote your podcast. And he was all in. So really happy to welcome Woody to the podcast, and let's start the show. All right, we are live with a crossover episode of the City of Smeg podcast with The Price of a Mile with Woody Kincaid. I'm joined by Woody Kincaid here on a nice Monday night in December. Woody, so where are we at? I guess, like, your rookie season got cut short due to injuries. We got very, very good 5K indoors. So then from there, like, what happened?
Actually, the week after that, I had an awesome, I wouldn't say awesome, we got beat by Shalima pretty bad, me and Ryan, but I got second at USA's, and that's when it started to get a little bad. I haven't raced since then. So that was in February?
Yeah.
I felt like we had a really hard training camp for me, like in Phoenix going up to that, or Flagstaff, and I felt great coming out of it. Obviously, we were just paced all the way through for that 13-12. And Jerry wanted us to get the feeling of racing hard and then having another effort just a few days after that. So we raced USA's. I got second, got pretty excited. Kind of had a little bit of like a deep soreness after that race, after the USA's in my thigh. And I was like, it's probably just a sore quad. And it turned out to be the beginning of a stress fracture. So I should have just taken like a couple of days off or maybe a week off after USA's, but I never did. So I don't know if I ever would.
So from there, what was the process of was it taking time off and then like seeing a couple doctors to get you all fixed up? I mean, and then from there, at what point did you finally start feeling good when you were running again?
We're just getting straight into this, huh? I didn't feel good until last month, to be entirely honest. So wow. I was in August. Oh, yeah. So I was training with Chris Derrick and Andrew Bumbo in Mammoth Lakes. And even then, I was watching them do awesome workouts, and I just didn't feel good going 70 minutes. So it really wasn't until I started race, or I wouldn't say racing workouts, but doing speed work here in Portland again in Hills, that it started to feel normal.
So now are you, I guess, gearing up for maybe giving it a shot for another indoor season? I mean, what's the overall feeling, I guess, about 2017?
Yeah, it's totally different from last year. Last year I was trying to make something happen. And I mean, I sort of did, but it's indoors and it was two races. So this year I'm just trying to stay with Jerry's training plan and kind of let fitness come to me. And I think I'm not going to chase anything down for it. So see what happens from there.
It was two indoor races, but they were like two very good indoor races. So, I mean, like I feel like you don't have anything to like get upset about. I mean, it was a really good sign. I don't think anyone's going to be sleeping on you from now on, but for you, I guess, like, to in an off year, is it, I guess, weird to have approach, I guess, a full rookie year? Cause I guess that's what we're calling it this entire year. This is going to be a rookie year. And we got two races out of it. So maybe you still maintain some of this rookie eligibility. So I guess in an off year, a lot of people are going to be chasing times. For you, is it just maybe staying healthy, or what's, is that kind of it?
Yeah, it isn't just about staying healthy, because I want to get out there and I still got something to prove. I still have this chip on my shoulder, but a lot of it will just be consistency and not towing the line as much as I have.
So we started off on a serious note, but overall, how are you enjoying the professional running life?
It's way better than I thought it was going to be, actually. When I was going into it, everyone was telling me that it was going to be so difficult, and that I would always be tired, or like I'd have no social life. It's not that way at all, because it sort of just feels like a continuation of adult life and college mixed into one. Like the Bowerman team, I can socialize with all day. You know, I can have a conversation with literally anyone on the team just one-on-one. So it's not like I don't have anyone to talk to. and so I have them to socialize with, and I just go to work every day. And my job is just to run. So it's been pretty good.
At what point did it hit you that you train with one of, I mean, I would make the case like the best training group in the United States. Some people, I put it out there, I think on Instagram with a caption, and some of the comments were lit up, and someone was like, oh, you know, what's Paul Chelimo going to have to say about this? Other people were like, what's, I mean, did you forget about the Oregon Project? But for you, was there a day you showed up to work and you're like, wow, it's like, I'm kind of lucky to be here. And also it's like, this is pretty cool that you have a front row seat to seeing some incredible performances in the making.
Yeah, I mean, when I first got there, I was like, wow, how did this happen? Like, I did feel very, very lucky to be there. But now that I've really, kind of put my head down and been through the workouts, I don't feel as lucky. I feel like I've this is my spot. Like, I deserve to be here, so it's, I think when I first got there, there was like a little bit of luck. You know, you have to have a good race at the right time to catch Jerry's attention. But, at the end of the day, I think that we're all on the same page. Like, I can run with these guys, you know.
When you were running at Portland, did you ever think that you would catch someone like Jerry's attention? And because I guess a lot of, maybe we've got some college kids who are listening to this, and it's like, what do you think you did in college that stood out to him?
Yeah, I mean, Jerry's an enigmatic figure. I wish I knew, to be honest. I think Jerry likes people who have a big engine, which I naturally have, for sure. He likes people with a big engine who aren't afraid to take big risks. And he likes people who are going to put themselves out there. And I definitely did that at some point in my career. That's all I can speak for.
Though. When you, now that you've been through it and you see some of these athletes that you're working with, do you look at, I guess, like a college cross country race, like NCAAs, and you think in the back of your head, without naming names, because I don't know if there's anything like in baseball where there's tampering or like recruiting violations and all that stuff, but do you, just in general, look at a race and be like, I think that guy would fit really well with what we were trying to do here?
I can't. Jerry can. That's his talent.
Really?
We were just talking about this on the run. Yeah. That Jerry's biggest, his best attribute as a coach, and he has many, it's that he knows how to spot talent. And I don't know if I had Jerry's eyes, you know, I could, you know, do what Jerry does, but I can't. So he picks it up. I can't tell you.
What was the biggest difference in going from Rob to Jerry?
Jerry's confidence in his athletes, probably. RC is notorious for being incredibly pessimistic about his athlete's performance. He just didn't want us to get last very often. Jerry's a really good predictor of how people are going to do. You know, he'll be like, you know, before I ran 13:12, he told me, he's like, what was your PR in college? And I'm like, 13:27? He's like, you're going to break 13:20. And I believed him. So the fact that he said that was just, it was a game changer.
Not a lot of people know a whole lot of stuff, I guess, about who Jerry is, because like he's kept himself, and we, especially on your podcast, we love hearing the secondhand stories, the impressions every now and then. Is he a guy who gives like the little pump up speech beforehand, or it's like, I mean, especially like before that race, that before that 5K, like what was the last thing he said to you before that race?
I don't think Jerry talked to me before the race.
That's great.
Jerry will talk your ear off if you get to know him, like if you're his athlete, or even, you know, if you're a stranger, he'll still talk to you. So it's funny that people don't know him because he's not really in the, he doesn't give interviews very often, but. To answer your question,
yeah,
did he give me a pump up speech? Does he give pump up speeches? He hasn't for me. I don't know what he's like before championship races, but I know before USA's, he was just like, yeah, you'll be fine. You're gonna get second or something. Like that. He's just like, you're gonna be in it. I wasn't. I don't think he has to say anything more to me. He changes it for each person, maybe.
I'm looking at some of these questions that are coming in live as we're talking. Someone wanted me to ask you, because it did come up in the Rob Connor podcast, winning conference and then throwing you around afterwards. Like, what was that like, I guess, from your perspective?
I listened to that Rob Connor podcast. RC was pretty – I felt kind of insulted. I don't feel like RC represented how I feel about how things happen. But that's interesting sometimes, different people's eyes. But
all right, give me your side of the story. I'm curious.
Which one? Which part? Are you talking about conference or nationals? I think one part where he's like, what do you think, Katie, like giving up in his race? And he just said, as if I – and he's like, but then I said hurry up, and Woody ran faster. I didn't see RC at all in that race. It's not like I looked at RC and didn't look into his soul and decided to try. No, that didn't happen. But whatever. That's how it is. That's how it's remembered. What was your question? Let's answer that one.
Winning conference. What was that like?
Against BYU, my sophomore year.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was probably the proudest I've ever been as a pilot. Because it was the race that I felt that we actually could become a better team after that race. Like, we could actually be a national contender. Before that race, I don't really know where my running career was going either. Because my freshman year, it was okay, but it wasn't very impressive. And then my sophomore year, you know, I started training with when I finished right behind him, and we won by 1 point when I outkicked somebody. that I want to say it, and just seeing how much of a difference that performance was,
right.
And then everyone was so happy. I mean, we celebrated like we just like won the World Series or something. You know, it was special. Yeah. I remember DP like ripped off his shirt and he was just like flexing his tats right after they announced it. Oh man. Fava was like extremely excited until he saw that I was like right behind him, and he didn't know I would be that close to him. But you know, he still got second. But yeah, that's my favorite moment as a pilot. That's what I'll say.
What was your recruiting trip like to Portland? That's two people have wanted to know that one.
Haven't I talked about that before? Go ahead.
Maybe on your podcast. We might have to track it down, but yeah. Well, I guess we'll have it here too.
These are probably like the
about,
three
I guess
kids
when you slept on the floor. Is it...
No, I did. I went through a phase in my college career where I was trying to practice to sleep on the floor, just so I could fall asleep anywhere because. That made sense to me. If I had to stay in a hotel and I had adapted to sleep on the floor, I could. But God, that was probably a sleepless semester, actually. What I liked about Portland when I went there is I was, first of all, I was hosted by Scott Fable and David Perry when they were freshmen, and they were hooligans, just total degenerates. They had the shit together. They were very different. You know, they were freshmen in college. But I stayed with them in every other place. I went to a hotel or something, and in Portland, I just stayed in their dorm room, and I stayed on a couch that was way too small. Like I had to curl up in a ball just to fall asleep. And I asked for a blanket, and they gave me like this little tiny like towel, just this, and I was cold the whole night. Miserable. And I'm just like, well, this is actually how it is here, and I appreciated that. And you know, they really liked to train hard. When I ran with them in the forest, all the guys, they like loved running, and they wanted to train. And then they went home and they had to sleep in a shitty dorm. I like that. So
it's very gritty. Very blue collar too.
That's right. No, we're not blue collar anymore. We can't even joke about that at all. At one point we were.
I guess you've talked on your podcast about being a vegan.
Mm-hmm.
Was RC the guy who got you in on that?
I don't know what you said, but I'm no longer vegan. But
you're no longer vegan.
No, I do support it, but after I got my stress fracture last spring, I made a compromise with Jerry and said, obviously he doesn't support that I was vegan, and said that I would be vegetarian or pescatarian, actually. So I will be vegan again one day, and it hurts me to be a vegetarian or pescatarian, but it's part of my job to do this, and I'm not going to undermine Jerry on principle. So he would love if I ate like beef and chicken, but that's where I draw the line.
Is that hard? Like, I guess, like, when did you first go into it and like make the dietary changes?
I actually became a vegan when I was in Kenya.
Really?
So yeah. When I was in Kenya, I lived with, first of all, I met an American there who was vegan. So that made it easier. He was training in Kenya also, who was vegan. And then I read some books that RC gave me. Vegan, of course, like the classics, like the China Study. Of course, you know, I was reading that, and meat wasn't really available over there. I mean, it would be for me, like if I wanted to go buy it, it'd be very cheap. But I just sensed the people in my community I was living with, I could just buy the food and they would cook for me if I so chose, or I would cook some nights. And generally they just ate beans, rice, tomatoes, skumawiki, and it was just easy to be vegan. and it just, it worked for me, and I stayed that way.
So it'd be really hard to get you to join Fauble's Burrito Mafia, right?
No, not at all, actually. I support the burrito campaign. I'm for it.
Steven wants me to ask you, how little did you run in high school? And I guess these are all things that you've touched on your podcast. For the listeners who are out there and not familiar with Woody's podcast, The Price of a Mile, Woody Kincaid, it's on iTunes, it's on SoundCloud. You can find it everywhere. Highly recommend it. But you give a lot of backstory, like kind of weaving it into other people's answers as well when you get some of their background into running. But for you, how little did you run and before you actually started taking it seriously?
Right. So my high school coach was avidly against high mileage. So she was married to a guy who ran for Colorado. So he was an experienced runner. And she was very young. She was like 26 when she started coaching me. And she was a sprinter in college. So a lot of our workouts were tailored towards low mileage and speed work. So I was running about 30 miles a week. I think high school running is all about just staying. You want to get better, but you also want to enjoy running and stay in the game, you know?
Right.
And still be competitive.
Have you been doing much work with some of these? I see a lot of photos with like it's at least like CD has been posting a bunch of photos with some of the Bowerman, like the club runners, the younger kids. Have you been doing much work with them?
Yeah. Yeah. I go out to the east side. So I don't go to Nike. I go to the more chill east side at Mount Tabor with Ryan Hill. I love it, actually. I really enjoyed it. I went there 2 days a week, and I actually spent some, like, 3 days a week going to Roosevelt High School. I wouldn't say that, more like 2 days a week going to Roosevelt, and then 2 days a week going to the kids out on the east side. And they actually did pretty well. It's pretty – what, the girls got second, the 12 to 14 at NXN?
I don't know the results off the top
of my
head. I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, it's really fun coaching the kids because some of them – you see the maturity difference. Like some of them, there's nothing you can do to stop them. They're going to do whatever they want, no matter what. And other ones, like it seems like at age 8, their brain just changes from "I'm going to do whatever I want" to "Okay, this person is going to help me get better," and they like try their very best. And it's a big deal to them. You know, I love them.
Here's a funny thing. It's from Scott Fauble. I have Woody's mom's phone number because he would lose his phone so much. So she would text me to get messages through to him for the year we lived together. Is this true?
yes, it is. I was notorious for not being a very poor communicator via text message. So I would I'd lose my phone very often in college, and Fauble would and my mom loves Scott. She adores Scott Fauble. She always want to know what Scott's doing. And so she would just be like, "Scott, can you please tell Woody that his flight start is at 6 p.m. tomorrow?" or something like that. And yeah, he'd relay that information.
So, and then you would have to respond to him like, "Oh, tell mom, okay." And then like, it's just like what's the longest exchange that you've had where Fauble was like the middleman for? had you ever had like
I mean,
a
there were
message
there was
back and forth?
There were weeks on end where I would just be like, "What did my mom say today?" You know, so I don't even know what the longest exchange, but it was frequently brought up. My mom loves everything about like college running since I was in it. So she's Facebook friends with everyone on the team.
That's awesome. So, the honorary pilot there. We had a question sent in on Twitter. Parko Parks says, "Woody, what are your favorite things about living in Oregon? P.S. I'm a large fan of the podcast."
Thank you. My favorite things about living in Oregon. I Give me a second. Well, it feels like it's become kind of like my home because I've been here for 6-7 years now. So it's hard to say, like, you know, I don't have like a favorite thing about it now. Now it just feels like a natural place for me to exist. So I guess the thing that I really like about just existing here are, you know, the forests, even though I don't get to go there anymore. I'm kind of a hipster in some ways. I guess people would say that. You know, I like to dress, you know, I like to go out with someone and watch little like obscure movies or something like that. I don't know. So I make friends here and it's my home. I really don't know my favorite thing other than Forest Park.
How much of that balance do you have? I guess this is something I guess that I've always been curious about distance runners, like professional ones. It's like some people manage to find that healthy balance where they want to have that friends group that doesn't really know like much about running. And then there's some people who have all the people around them like very much into it. What's, I guess, your balance? And I guess like, how do you mix it up?
Yeah, so I spend like 90% of my day talking to like the guys on the team. We have a group thread, and I spend like 90% of my day talking about running or whatever Dan's ranting about, Dan Healing, and then probably 10% of my day talking to normal people, like my girlfriend and my roommate, and that's about it. On a normal day, I'll just see like two people who aren't runners, and then like the rest are just runners, and that's okay with me. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with the 90-10%.
Let's see, we got another one, another question from RJ. This is something that could go super hot on Let's Run. If you guys had to form a DMR to go up against the Nike Oregon Project, who would be the four members of the Bowerman track team that you would select to go to battle?
Who's going to take the shortest rep is the question. I'm taking Evan, Mo, Ryan, and then Lopez because he's a wild card. He just has that natural speed. Yeah, those are my four right there. Lopez is the surprise pick right there. It will go.
What distances would you assign them?
Lopez will be, I think, what is Lopez's PR?
Is he a 146 guy? 145?
I want to say he is, yeah. So he's going to be my 800 guy. I guess Mo? No. Okay, Lopez will be 400 because I feel like he's got the legs, just the raw speed. Ryan will be my 800. Mo definitely is not going to be in there. I take that out because he can't run a 15 for the life of him. He's in a 3:43. I'm going to put myself in there just because I don't know. Let's see, just to see what happens. I want to, you know, I think with more people in the race, I might have some extra juice. So I'll take.
That's a good one.
I'll take who's the best 1600 meter runner we got. Who's the best 15 guy? I mean, Evan will be. He used to be at some point. So it will be me in 16, Evan in 12, Ryan in the 8, Lopez in the 4 to bring home.
I like that. I could see that. Now, the follow-up question would be, I guess you could divide it into two generations, the Oregon Project, where for a while they had, I guess like Galen was still ripping it on the track a year or two ago, but now he's more of the roads. You guys can beat this generation of the Nike Oregon Project easier than it would be to beat the previous generation. I guess just because eliminating Galen. Galen would not have a spot on this relay, I guess, nowadays.
So you think that we'd beat him?
Right?
No.
I think you
can. I'm just – so, I mean, they've got the shorter distance guys. You know, I mean, they got Ingles now, and Jenkins can still lay it down. Probably going to 3:33.
Oh, I forgot about Jenkins.
Yeah, I mean – they got three guys that can really hammer, and I don't see, you know, the guy just ran 20 miles out at Savvy's finishing at 5 flat. So it's like, I don't see us really having the legs for it right now, especially.
Yeah, this is like an ultimate debate where it's like, what if you plucked like the guys in their prime, like from Rupp and Mo when they were, I guess, on the track in their prime. Bowerman versus NOP. That is like a good, like, that's like the most boring bar debate, but it's something you'd find maybe at like the Wild Duck or something like that. But maybe that's the only place in the country where you'd find a debate like that. But it is something to think about.
You know, I think it's one I've heard a lot of times. So it's like most people, I would say, you know, like the I hear it a lot. NOP would, there's a lot of NOP fans out there. It's almost an 80-20%, but I still would cheer for Bowerman no matter what. I can't say anymore.
Now, how much money? No, that's getting too many logistics here. I was gonna say, how much money would fans have to raise for that DMR to happen?
Jerry, nothing. Jerry, you could offer us like $1 billion. Jerry wouldn't care. Money isn't a real thing. It's fiat money. Nothing matters to Jerry except for pure excellence.
All right, that's fair. I like that approach. Riley Sign, yeah. At Running Sign, asks, best Jerry stories so far, and the second part, any advice for smaller school runners with the aspirations of turning pro?
Smaller school runners as in like mid-majors?
Yeah, I guess that works. Or maybe like a D2 kid trying to go pro. You do find those success stories.
Yeah, so I'll answer that question first, I suppose. Advice for the mid-major is you got to get your foot in the door to really get into those fast heats. So if you want to do well as a mid-major, you have to put yourself in a position where you make maybe go the extra mile to get the time and to maybe to network a little bit to get into the faster races. So, I say once you get that chance once you're in a good race, then you really got to take advantage of it. Now, favorite Jerry story. I've so many stories of Jerry that I feel like the character of Jerry has been morphed in my memory of what Jerry actually did. I did like it. So all of us were expecting to have like some extra time off, or just like an easier workout on Thanksgiving, and of course Jerry texts us like at 10 o'clock the night before that, like, if you're here for Thanksgiving, you don't have the day off. And of course he gives us like the hardest workout that we've done all year, and Jerry's not even there. So he had like a doctor's appointment, he said, Thanksgiving.
When he texted me after the show and wanted me to clear it up, Jerry actually was at the practice. He just misremembered it.
I thought that was funny.
What's, I guess, your relationship like with Pascal? I mean, he's been, you know, a guy who's Jerry's right-hand guy behind the scenes a little bit, but also he deserves a lot of credit for the success that the group's had in recent years.
Yeah, I mean, Pasky, I've probably talked to Pasky more than Jerry. I mean, I definitely do. I talk to Pasky, like, you know, I text him every day. My relationship, like, he's really, my relationship with Pasky is still growing. I think Pasky is not really like figured out who I am yet, so I like confuse him a little bit because we're very different people. So when I make a joke, he'll be like, "Yeah, okay. Anyways, here's what you need to do. You know, I need to explain this to you." But no, he's a super nice guy. Like he's genuinely a nice guy and very good at what he does. I don't think that I still confuse him a little bit. But most people get along with them.
That's fair enough.
Everyone does. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you'll grow. You'll grow, and in time, you guys will be best buddies. You guys will be a buddy cop film in the making.
I actually think so. He's definitely the good cop. I'll be bad cop.
What's that you've ever been beat in a workout?
The worst?
Yeah, because you kind of touched on this a little bit in your podcast with Alexi. And she was saying how when she was with OTC and training with like with Sally Cabiego, she would find herself dropping out of workouts. And that was part of the plan sometimes, but that was a growing pain that came along with being in a professional group and in that setting. So for you, what was your worst day, but other people looked amazing?
Definitely a long run at Savvy's. Yeah, so I've been pretty good about, you know, I'll hang on to the last rep and then blow up the last 200 meters on runs. On those long runs, it's like I can't do this for another 10 minutes, Jerry. And that, you know, those last 5 minutes I've been going deep into the well, and they've been pulling the well. In the speed workouts I get dropped frequently. So I don't even know what the worst one is because it happens like nearly every time at this point.
What's the dumbest purchase that you've made with your pro contract?
Any purchase, really, because you don't, you're not going to make, if you're looking to make a ton of money as a pro runner, it's not going to happen. So the dumbest purchase I made was definitely, is probably purchasing Mamma Mia tickets for my girlfriend last Christmas. I remember Matt singing, like, I told him I got the tickets, and he just kept singing, "Mamma Mia, why'd I pay so much?" yeah, Matt Hughes.
Who's the most competitive teammate that you've ever had? These are like rapid fire questions that I've like jotted down.
Yeah. The most competitive teammate I've ever had, I would have to say Fable.
Really?
Yeah, he's definitely, he's the most, he's the most competitive. He's one of those guys that, you know, the last rep, he'll make it a race if he wants to. He wants to finish first, no matter what. Is that insulting? I mean, I hope not.
No, that's a good answer, I would say. Right. Yeah, I mean, like, he's, when I talked to him back in like August on the show, you could tell that I brought up the fact that I don't think he'd won a race in like 2 years. And he was like, yeah, I know, that's like something that I don't matter for him. That's just something that he always wants to stick his nose in. And it's like, just win.
He'll do it, man. I mean, everyone on the team is incredibly competitive and someone always feels good. But the good thing about running with Bowerman versus my college running is it's not a 1v1 or even a 1v3. I wouldn't even say V anything. It's like we all just want to get through this workout. It's hard for all of us. And no one wants to be the person that tries to, quote unquote, win the workout.
Here's one I just thought of, because there's that photo of you and Brian Schrader going out and just like, risking it all at the Olympic trials. What were you thinking in that moment, just like going for it?
I thought that everyone, I looked around, when Schrader took off, I looked around, I'm like, is nobody going to go with him? Like, are you just going to let this guy go by himself and blow up? And everyone else in their head, they're like, yeah, that guy, he's doing something ridiculous. I'm going to let him do that. I was just like, nah, this guy, I'm not going to just let him go out there and blow up by himself, so. I went with it. It was a split second decision, and I thought, like, oh, maybe I can hang on.
Yeah. So the way that the rest of that race played out, what was your vantage point once they started swallowing you guys up and caught you guys?
Well, actually, when they caught us, Schrader disappeared. I have no idea. Like, he just, you know, he's like, what happened to Schrader? How did he get gone? But I once they caught us, I just, I'm like, no, I have to hang on. Like, I would look. Just the way that it would look terrible. I made myself hang on. But I didn't have the wheels with that last lap. And I think I ran like 55 and everyone ran a 50 or 56 even, and everyone ran a 52. So I felt pretty, I guess, angry? I don't know. I wasn't angry. I don't know what I felt.
Yeah, but then from there, it was pretty soon after that I guess, like, things started coming together and you had a pro career lined up. So, I mean, the worst case scenario would have been that you blew up and then no one wanted to take a shot on you. But Jerry saw something special.
Yeah, I think when I did get the contract with Bowerman, there were people who are my close friends. And I appreciate when people are honest with me. They're just like, no one understands why Jerry picked you at all. Like, you look at all the college athletes, and they're just like, you weren't even an All-American in college. No one knows why they picked you, except for people who went to Portland. And even after that Olympic trials races, I don't think people were like, man, Woody Kincaid, he's the next guy. So I'm lucky Jerry saw something.
We'll talk about we'll move right into, I guess, the podcast. Because when did you get the idea for that? We launched the site back in like February, and then not too long after that, I think Kirsch like reached out and was like, Woody has an idea and wants to do a podcast with us. And I was all for it, because at this point I was like kind of like coming up with ideas as to like what we can do with the site. And I like take a lot of notes and inspiration from like The Ringer and then just a bunch of other like sports podcasts that I've been familiar with. And the fact that Richard Jefferson had like a podcast on the Cavaliers interviewing teammates, it's one of the coolest conversations that you could have. And when you offered up this idea, I was like, yes, 100%. We like, this is awesome. So how did you, like, where did your interest come into podcasting?
So to answer the first question, where the idea came from, I was actually thinking of doing a podcast in the summer before I joined Bowerman. I was like sitting at the tea room or something, like after the trials, and everyone was talking about how they don't know runners at all. And I was like, well, I mean, that's on us. Like, I think I got a little heated. I'm like, that's not everyone else's fault. That's like our fault and no one knows who we are. And then I think someone's like, well, then do something about it. I'm like, well, then I will. You'll see. and that's how it started, actually. But I'm also a big podcast. Like, I love to listen to podcasts. I listen to like a lot of history podcasts. And my favorite podcast is actually Oh Yeah Dude, which is just two guys talking about American life. And, you know, running podcasts I listen to just stay in the know.
Like, you and CD had, like, a bunch of conversations about, like, Dan Carlin's hardcore history on, like, long runs and stuff?
Yeah, actually. I actually don't like Dan Carlin's one. I think he thinks he knows too much. But that's another long run podcast or long run discussion.
Yeah.
Like History Extra or Revolution podcast for history podcasts.
Okay. And what about general sports ones? Like,
to be honest, I know that the team listens to The Herd, but I usually just listen to Broncos or Rockies podcasts specifically. So I don't listen to general podcasts.
Guys on the team listen to Colin Cowherd, really? Of all people?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ryan's a huge fan. And so is Dan.
Oh, man. Ryan.
You want to weigh into The Herd?
No, I'm not a Colin Cowherd guy at all. I don't know. There's just something about him. Ever since he left ESPN, I like really haven't kept up with him. So I'm not a fan of Colin Cowherd. I'm judging a little bit right now.
Good. I hope they hear this.
So for you, I guess the process, like, runners have a lot of free time on their hands. When you sit down and edit an episode, I'm sure there's a bunch of people, including myself, who are like, man, this is so good, like, we should get these weekly. But it takes a while for you, I guess. Like, what's your process and how are you learning as you're going?
Yeah, I mean, you can probably tell the difference from the first one to now. Actually, it's been a huge learning experience, and it's really weird. It's like a diary. You know, I went back and listened to Jager's podcast the other day when I was just going through it, and I hear some things that I couldn't believe I believed a year ago, but now that's out there in the world forever. So some things that I've learned is it's going to be weird for them to talk to their teammates. So people are used to doing interviews with people like you who are professional interviewers and are going to ask them things that aren't very personal, you know?
Yeah.
We're like having a conversation with your teammates. I think it's a little awkward at first for them to really get in the zone. Now, CD has an analytical brain. So I learned, you're going to love CD's episode because he's so good at leading the discussion and really picking people's brain apart. So things that I've learned.
So that's the next one?
Big ones. Yeah, yeah. Kate Grace and Chris Derrick. CD wants to be on the pod. So I convinced him finally. Yeah, so I think he brings a little bit more. I don't think I dive into the questions as much as CD did on this one. So that's something I'm still working on.
Yeah, but so far, so good. That was another thing. CD in the late night thing that he did with Scott Olberding was, I thought, great. And a bunch of people did too, because the numbers on that thing were, it was viewed a ton of times. And there were so many like great answers in there that, I keep telling Scott, I was like, we got to schedule another one. And that thing was so good. We'll just have to try and make it happen. I'm looking forward to this next podcast. So I mean, before I let you go, I've got to ask you the three questions that I ask all my guests at the end of the show. So the first one, what's the meanest thing that you've read about yourself on letsrun.com?
I haven't been really reading.
Hold on, it's getting really staticky. Give me one sec. Let's see if it clears up. All right, Sitwits, I have some bad news. Right after that, the call dropped, and I was unable to get a hold of Woody again. We had already been running a little bit late on time, and the connection wasn't that great. So my apologies on getting you his final three answers, but I did message him on and tried to get a response through text. So I do have an answer to the final three questions that I ask every guest. So the first one was, what's the meanest thing that you've read about yourself on letsrun.com? And he said that there was some sort of thread where someone mentioned that he dresses like a hippie or a stoner, which is, I guess, not the worst thing that you could read on there. The other question that I ask all my guests is, if you could run anywhere in the world with one person from history, who would it be and where would this run take place? And so he said he'd go with Jesus. He'd run with Jesus and it would solve a lot of problems or start more, which is a great, great response. No one has said Jesus yet. So it took almost, I think, more than 40 episodes now we're in. Finally, someone says Jesus. Great answer. And then the other question that I end the show with is, you get 25 shots from half court. If you make one, you win $25 million. If you make none, then you go to jail for 25 years. And Woody says that he would not take the shots. He wants freedom. He says, quote, "You can't put a price on freedom. These colors don't run. Home of the free, land of the brave." So those were Woody's answers to the final three questions of the show. So I think that does it for this episode of the CDSMAC podcast. If you made it this far into the show, really 100%, 100 times, thank you, because I understand that this was not the best quality episode with the audio, but still some solid responses there by Woody. We're going to work on maybe doing another podcast, another crossover episode, maybe on the Price of a Mile feed, which you can find on SoundCloud and iTunes. It's The Price of a Mile with Woody Kincaid. A lot of great episodes. So as we teased in the middle of this show, the next episode will not feature Woody. Instead, it will be Chris Derrick interviewing Kate Grace about joining the Bowerman Track Club. So keep your eyes peeled on that one when it comes out, probably sometime around the early part of next year, so 2018. It'll be a nice little New Year's gift for you guys. I'm going to try and do another episode next week. I understand the holidays are coming up, but maybe that'll be my gift to you. I'll try and find one or two more guests. A lot of people are going on a vacation, so it's hard to get a hold of some people. I already have a couple people in mind for early shows in 2018 and have started scheduling those. They're going to be pretty good. But yeah, that's it for this show. A reminder that you can try the world's most carbohydrate-rich sports drink. It's awesome. Maybe ask for it for Christmas. Maybe give it to a runner that you know. who is looking to drop a nice fast marathon time or a half marathon time. This is what is fueling champions around the globe. It's Maurten, M-A-U-R-T-E-N. You could find it online, maurten.com. And when you, you know, buy the drink mix, there's two types with different types of carbs in them. You can choose whichever one you think will probably work best. I use the 320 mix for my long runs. But when you do get it, use promo code CMP20, easy to remember, Insidious Mag podcast. So CMP20, and you get 20% off your next order. It's a great gift for the holidays, so check that out. That is Maurten, M-A-U-R-T-E-N.com. So I'll catch you guys maybe next week, maybe the week after that. Don't hold me to it, but continue to visit CitiesMag.com for all the goodies. And that's it for me. I've been your host, Chris Chavez, wishing you some happy and healthy running.